Now, in our home and garden segment today, we're speaking to the citizen-based organization Tree Keepers, which aims to protect the trees in Cape Town's urban forest. We want to talk to them about the importance of trees in our urban context, and then more specifically about the current tree felling that is happening all over the southern suburbs in response to the shot-hole borer beetle infestation. Primarily, I want to get their advice on managing the issue from the perspective of trying to prevent infestation in the first place, and then secondly, if trees must be felled, what could be planted in their place. Let's not get the cart before the horse, though. Let's first welcome the chairperson of Tree Keepers Cape Town, Claire Burgess, who is joining us via Zoom. It's great to have you with us, Claire. Welcome.
Hi, thank you very much for inviting me.
Pleasure. Tell us a bit more about Tree Keepers. Who are you? When were you formed? What was the purpose?
Okay, so Tree Keepers started in the southern suburbs about 8 years ago, when a group of citizens got concerned about the number of trees that were being removed from their particular neighborhood. And the group had a lawyer involved, they had a marketing person. They were all volunteers, though, and through that process they started to pull in other people from friends groups and park groups and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And eventually Tree Keepers was founded as a friends group and has recently become an MPO. So we can raise funds and start to do the work that we would really like to do.
Which is what, Claire?
Our focus is on conserving trees in the urban forest. So we're very much focused on city landscapes, city planting, gardens in suburbs and in town, and streetscapes and that sort of thing. And we're really concerned about the fact that we have a number of trees in our urban forests, but they're not really well looked after. And if you look at the services that those trees provide to our citizens, virtually free of charge, because they've been there for years and they really do have very little cost attached to maintaining them. It's a great shame that we tend to take them for granted and don't care for them in the way that we should be doing so. And so we've partnered with the city. We have a MOU with the city, and we work quite closely with the city arborist of the City Recreation and Parks Department.
You said we take them for granted, we don't appreciate what they do for us, Claire. Before we move on to specifically looking at the shot-hole borer issue, won't you just tell us a little bit more generally about what it is that trees do for us? It's not just about beautification. What is the importance of trees in the urban landscape?
Yes, so, I mean, most people think of trees from the point of view of they look great in a garden, they provide shade and shelter. Those are the obvious things, but actually they're serving a number of very important ecological functions. They absorb carbon from the air, and they convert carbon into oxygen. They also absorb pollutants, and in cities these days, pollutants are becoming actually more of a problem than straight carbon dioxide. There's a lot of material that is in the air that is moving around. It's very small particulates. And those particulates can be absorbed by trees and processed through the tree system down into the soil. So trees are helping to keep our cities clean and provide us with oxygen to breathe. They also, you know, work very well when it comes to things like screening out the neighbors or screening out views or buildings and that sort of thing. And they provide a wonderful habitat for birds and insects and the bees in particular. Yeah. And it's generally acknowledged that if you live in a green, leafy suburb with lots of trees, you'll probably have a higher property value than if you live in an area with no trees. Mm. So they actually add value economically to our properties and to which, I mean, citizens generally are quite concerned about that type of thing.
Yeah. Just for those. Yeah,
the other thing, sorry, that I just want to say is they also work with heavy rains. They help to absorb water and keep it in the soil. And they also help to process water in such a way that the water is down below the tree in the root zone, although obviously there's also water in the leaves and the trunk. But the processing of water is also a critical thing that they do.
So lots of very, very good reasons to want to protect them. Now, Claire, obviously anybody who loves trees and recognizes the value of all the things you've just mentioned will be feeling, at the very least, distressed right now to see trees being felled all over the southern suburbs because of shothole borer beetle infestation. And we had a conversation a few weeks ago with a company working on an experimental nanotechnology-based fungicide, not approved yet for use in an urban setting. It's not available to the toolkit of the city just yet. So in the meantime, City of Cape Town's decision is that if a tree is infested, then it needs to be marked for taking down, and taking down in a very specific way. We wanted to get some advice from you on firstly how to avoid reaching that position, and then secondly, if we are there, what to do next. So let's start with the former. Obviously, the better alternative here is to help your trees fight off shothole borer beetle infestation. Can that be done, Claire?
Yes. You know, as with anything, if you're healthy and a tree is a living entity like us, you're more likely to overcome anything that is thrown your way that is detrimental to your health. So, yes, keeping your trees healthy is likely to make it more difficult for the infestation of the beetle and its fungus to kill your tree. And another aspect of that is that if you had a sort of early warning system of the tree maybe being infested, but only in one or two branches, you could take action at that point.
Yep.
And in fact, the protocol that the city has put out in the past has identified that there had to be more than a certain number of the little holes in a tree to necessitate the removal of the tree.
Yeah.
If it was just in one branch or something like that, you could take action and remove the branch, use the same protocol for removing it carefully, not spreading the disease, etc. But I think that we're past that point with a number of trees already. You know, the experience in Somerset West has shown that once this beetle gets a hold in an area, it really does spread pretty quickly. And so looking after our trees might be something that people on the outskirts of the city or in rural areas where the PSHB hasn't yet come, or if you're in a big property and you know you haven't brought PSHB into your property through firewood or something like that, then you could be working in an estate, for instance, to feed your trees. By feeding and watering your trees through summer, you are giving them more strength, more food, and a better chance of survival, not just from PSHB, but in fact, from many different types of pests and diseases that affect trees throughout the city. So feeding a tree and also watering it. So we had the drought not so long ago, 5 years ago, and we know how detrimental that was to all of our big mature trees. Not only did the ground around them dry out and maybe the water table dropped a bit, and so they became very stressed, but they also found it difficult to, you know, the branches weren't cleaned off the leaves, so they accumulated much more dust particles and things like that. And so photosynthesis was more difficult. So these things have stressed our trees considerably, and most of our urban forest currently is very vulnerable. So if you have trees in your garden that you're particularly concerned about or you particularly love, helping them by feeding, watering them, and putting a big thick layer of mulch around the base would definitely be one way to improve the conditions for the life of those trees. There are also a number of sprays that you can use, but they're quite specific, and they usually come along with the organic movement, and they use things like neem oil and cow dung and things like that, which help to feed a tree. You can rub them in the bark. But I don't know the details of those. I'm not a horticulturist, and Tree Keepers is not a horticultural organization. We're a planning organization. So we would say, you know, if you're concerned about those things, consult a horticulturalist or an organic farmer and see what they have to help you look after your trees better.
Just for those who might have joined us late to the conversation, we are joined via Zoom by Claire Burgess, who is the chairperson of Tree Keepers Cape Town. They are now a registered NPO, passionate about preserving our urban tree forest. And we're talking to her about, well, the previous conversation about helping our trees to be resilient and to fight off a shot-hole borer beetle infestation. Claire, of course, as you've correctly said, that's not always going to be possible, and particularly if the beetle is already sort of entrenched in an area, it's a big ask. Previously, as you said, people might have gotten away with taking action against the odd infected branch, perhaps on their own. But we're past that point now. Talk to us a little bit about the strategy that the city is using for dealing with trees that are infested beyond the point of saving. It's very important to emphasize that it is not something that should be undertaken by the layman at home, as you would deal with any other tree that needed to be removed.
Yes. So the city has a protocol. The Invasive Species Unit have published that, and the information about that protocol is available on the city website. But essentially, you need to get a professional team in to remove the tree in such a way that it is mulched. In other words, it's chipped up into a smaller type of fiber. It's all kept in one place. The equipment that is used must be cleaned before it comes onto the site and then re-cleaned afterwards to make sure that the equipment doesn't carry any of the fungus or beetle. And the material that has been chipped and shredded is then solarized. It can be put into a closed truck and taken to a place to be burnt, an incinerator. But I think that, you know, that's quite a, there's not that many incinerators in the city. So that's maybe not the way we can go. So for most people, it'll probably be the solarization process. And what we recommend is that you keep the material that is infested on your property, because then you're not going to spread it to other people's properties or along the street, which unfortunately has happened in Somerset West. And to solarize something, what you have to essentially do is cover it in plastic, make sure that none of the material can get out, and then you let the sun heat it up. Now, in summer, you probably need to do that for 3 months. In winter, where we have less sun, you're probably going to need to do that for 6 months. So you might have to dedicate a part of your garden or your driveway or whatever to a pile of mulch under black plastic. And leave it there as long as is necessary, and then you can actually utilize that mulch afterwards. All gardens always need mulch. It's a biomass, and all our soils in the Western Cape need good quantities of biomass to feed them. We have very sandy soils or very clay soils, and organic matter is essential to improve all our soils.
Okay.
So there is a bit of a win-win there, in that at least you're not having to get rid of something that you actually could reutilize in your garden later.
Yeah.
But it's going to take space. And I mean, we're living in a city. Not everybody has space.
Yeah.
So I think there needs to be a cooperative process. The city itself needs to allocate areas where this mulch can be solarized. And we did discuss this 4 years ago with the city. And we said, you need to find dedicated areas to do that. But at this stage, they haven't done that.
It's very frustrating. I know a lot of people feeling very frustrated that we are sort of playing catch up now and reacting when we could have been planning better longer ago. But anyway, the situation is what it is, and we have to deal with what we have right now. Claire, one important thing before we talk about replanting, because obviously if you've taken down a tree, one would like to think that people would find the space and time to plant something new. Would you need to treat the soil or do anything to the environment before you plant something new? Do you run the risk of introducing remnants of the beetle into the new plant that you put in there if you haven't done so?
I believe that the beetle doesn't tend to go deep into the roots. It can go into the lower part of the trunk. So when the tree is removed, as long as you take out most of the trunk, you could use a stump cutter to take out the whole stump thing and actually shred that and put it through and solarize it. But in general, I would say it's always important to leave an area where there has been planting, whether it's a tree or shrub or vegetables, for a short while to allow the soil to regenerate. And so if you expose it to the sun, that in itself will help to, you know, kill off any lurgies. And then I would bring in good quality compost and, you know, work the soil over. Do not plant directly where the tree was before, rather try and plant to the side or something like that. And make sure that you have a lot of compost and good quality topsoil in that hole, and then replant. I don't think it's necessary to fumigate or do any of those things which actually poison the microorganisms in the soil, which you don't want to do. You want to help your soil to be as organic and as bio-friendly as possible.
Claire, just in the 30 seconds or so that we've got left, any suggestions on appropriate trees to be replanting? I mean, a lot of people, very sad to see really old trees with substantial growth being taken down as a result of this infestation. And the tendency might be to say plant something that'll grow quickly to replace it. Any advice on what to replant?
Yeah, I want to make a very strong point here. We cannot replace trees, mature trees. To replace a mature tree and to replace the benefits that that mature tree gives us is impossible. You know, a 100-year-old oak tree is doing so many services that one new sapling is not going to provide that replacement value. So when we talk about replanting, we should maybe think about planting three or four trees if we can, instead of just one. And I would plant small at this stage and see how they grow, because we're still not 100% sure which trees are going to be vulnerable to this and which not. But there is a sort of list that everyone agrees is probably a suitable trees. There's the white pear, the forest elder, the pom-pom tree, and the white stinkwood. And a favorite of mine would be to reintroduce flowering gums, because they're such a beneficial tree for the bees, and they've unfortunately had a bad rap for many years, but they really are a fantastically strong growing tree, which is suitable for our coastal areas and would be able to create a lovely flowering, relatively fast growing plant for long-term sustainability. They live a long time. Whereas most of the other trees that I've mentioned are sort of medium-sized, small, not very long-lived trees.
Claire Burgess, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate your time. Chairperson of Tree Keepers Cape Town.